One of my many joys, as I've mentioned in the course of my ministry here, as I've mentioned on other occasions, was connecting with Rick Maston back in the late 1990s, and then the friendship that grew out of our meeting up. This all happened, I met him well after Rick's heyday in our Unitarian Universalist movement, which began in the late 1960s when he kind of took on the role of our UU troubadour, minister, poet, musician, and a kind of a elder statesman hippie, I guess. I'm not sure how well he would have liked having that last designation hung on him, but I'll do it anyway. Well, by the time I got to know Rick, he was in a more reflective mood about his life as he lived and operated out of his lifelong home in Carmel, California. He hadn't completely left the road. Some of you may remember about 7 years ago in 2005, he was here to be with us. But by then he was definitely looking back. And this was why he and I collaborated on a book about his life and times in our liberal religious movement, which included but went well beyond his composing his signature song, Let It Be a Dance. Rick had a lot of stories from his travels across the Unitarian Universalist landscape, geographical and otherwise, in the latter part of the 20th century, and we wanted to get them down while he was still around to tell them. As things turned out, we cut it kind of close. Rick died in the spring of 2008, 4 months after we launched his book, our book, at his and Billy Barber's home church in Monterey. So on this Easter Sunday morning, I'd like to give the late Reverend Rick Maston one more parting shot from his poetry. This is a poem he wrote. I'm doing one more parting shot on this Easter Sunday of 2012. I'm going to share some lines from the Easter poem he wrote with the title, On Butterfly Wings. You know, for the life of me, I can't recall what happened last Good Friday. Christmas I can, because Mother got smashed. And the baby, seeing his image distorted on the surface of 1,000 ornaments, cried all day. And on Easter it rained, so the candy hidden in the grass got sticky, and we had to wash the ants off before we let the kids out. But somehow I missed Good Friday. Looking the other way, I guess, like I do. I mutter under my breath about the high cost of funerals and how the undertakers are bleeding us dry like vampires, not stopping to realize we can't pay these guys enough to handle what scares us to death. An old guru once told me the only thing we have to do in this life is die. And I think I shall repeat this statement over and over, 100 times each night before I go to sleep. Perhaps, if I could bring myself to believe it, I mean really believe it, and remember what happens on Good Friday, I just might come out and find myself some sunny Easter morning on butterfly wings, rising. Well, I hesitate to dissect a poem, but as I've told you probably more times you need to hear from me by now, if I hadn't chosen the ministry for a career, there's a pretty good chance I would have been an English teacher, so maybe I just got to get my inner English teacher out from time to time. You can humor me for a few minutes here. It's one of the oldest of human themes, of human truths, of human paradoxes that Rick is waxing poetic about here. He pokes fun at his own avoidance or denial of death. Can't remember what happened on Good Friday. Goes on to put in a good word for morticians. We can't pay these guys enough to handle what scares us to death. Little gallows humor here. Reminds me of a mock headline in that crazy satirical newspaper, The Onion. Maybe some of you are familiar with that. Yeah, sounds like some of you are anyway. I think one of my favorite headlines from The Onion was one that read, World death rate holds steady at 100%. Well, yeah, it does. Always has. Anyway, when Rick's gotten his humor out of what is most fearful, he cuts to the chase. An old guru once told me the only thing we have to do with this life is die, while referring to this embrace of mortality as a gift. A gift, he says, I was never able to accept graciously. But then, how many of us can accept our mortality as a gift to be received graciously? The closing stanza then is really no more than a reminder that it is just such an embrace. If I can really believe and remember what happens on Good Friday, it is just such an embrace that allows life to take on some of its deepest meanings, gives us some of its deepest joys. It's Easter morns on butterfly wings, that is to say. Well, it's not always easy to believe. Not easy for me to believe anyway, this idea that the fullness of life emerges out of an encounter or an awareness with the starkness of death. But then perhaps this is why this very theme is at the heart of most of the religions and the rituals and the celebrations that we human beings have created for ourselves over the course of human history. Our earliest human ancestors created rites and ceremonies that would appeal to those gods and goddesses whom they believed would cause life to emerge once again from a seemingly dead earth. For they knew that without a resurrection of the earth, there could be no life, in the most literal sense of the word for them. The very name we give this day, Easter, comes from one of those goddesses of fertility, Estre, to whom our pagan predecessors appealed. That same theme is found in more human terms in the legends and the myths that gave rise to both the Judaic and Christian traditions and faiths. Kind of ghastly stuff in both cases. The firstborn sons of the Egyptians had to die, even as the specter of death passed over the sons of the Israelites before the journey to a new life in a new world could get underway. That's the story, the legend of Passover that we shared at our Seder this past Friday evening. Very wonderful gathering we had here. Jesus, as the legend of his life tells it, had to die an excruciating kind of death before his followers could experience his risen presence and carry forth his message of radical and redeeming love. Words Gary shared are about how it's incumbent upon us to carry that message forward in whoever's name we may wish to do so. The Easter moment, the sense of a newness of life, the feeling of rising on butterfly wings, to use Rick's metaphor, all come eventually out of an awareness of both of our mortality and the mortality of those whom we know and love and share life with, those whose lives touch ours deeply. And so an Easter moment, then, is really a time when life calls us back. Calls us back from a time of loss or defeat, or from the deaths in life that inevitably come our way. And the Easter challenge that goes with that is, are we ready to respond when that call comes? It's true. You cannot rush a resurrection. If your life has been broken in some way, it doesn't quite work to pretend that all is well and healed if that hasn't happened. Sometimes we have to wait for life in its fullness to come back to us after a time of diminishment and loss, just as our earliest ancestors had to wait for the life to return to the earth that appeared to them to be dead. But when it is time to re-engage again, when life calls us back, we have to be ready to respond. I guess what I'm saying here is there are certain kinds of resurrections we have to wait for. And then there are resurrections we have to create or have a hand in. Sometimes the two even overlap. One of my colleagues in the Unitarian Universalist ministry, who also gave us the words for our chalice lighting this morning, the Reverend Mark Harris, makes this point with these well-chosen words. We Unitarian Universalists celebrate the many resurrections of this season. We celebrate the glories of the earth when birds take to wing and crocuses force their way through the soil to announce the arrival of spring. We celebrate the untold number of courageous individuals and groups who sacrifice their lives to liberate others from oppression and create a more just and loving world. We celebrate the ability of the human heart to overcome terrible personal tragedy or handicap and affirm once again the ability to love and to excel when many others would have given up hope. Easter celebrates the times of witnessing, experiencing, and creating the resurrections of human life. Just focus on those last three words there at the end of that piece. Witnessing, experiencing, and creating. Some resurrections we can only witness. I already noted, we see the earth and nature slowly work their way back to life. This is an Easter blessing we simply and joyfully receive, knowing that it will arrive in its own good time. Time that we do not control. Some resurrections we experience, such as when we experience the influence, the impact, the meaning that the lives of those loved ones whom we have lost continue to bestow upon us and let us know that our loss is not a complete one, that their presence, their life still is with us and nurtures us in many ways. This too is an Easter blessing that will come if we can give it the time to arrive. And then there are the resurrections we create in the manner I referred to a few minutes ago. These are times when we pick ourselves up after a personal defeat or disappointment or a time of pain and grief and decide that the life journey is still worth taking for the promises and possibilities it still holds out. These two are Easter moments. We create for ourselves, and we create it on the strength of our own human and spiritual resources. On that note, I'm going to go back to another Rick Maston poem. It's a way of drawing these thoughts to a close. This one was written some years after he wrote the Butterfly Wings one, after he'd been given a cancer diagnosis, which eventually claimed his life. Title here is pretty simple and stark. He titled this poem Inline. I've always been a yin yang, front, back, clear, blur, up, down, life, death kind of guy. My own particular duality being philosopher / hypochondriac. Win-win characteristics when you've been diagnosed with a life-threatening disease. Finally, the hypochondriac has more than windmills to tilt with. The philosopher arming himself with exactly the proper petard. An explosive statement found in an email message beneath the signature of a cancer combatant's name. A perfect inline, wily and wise. Quote, I ask God, how much time do I have before I die? Enough to make a difference, God replies. Be it from God, from the spirit of life, from the inner stirrings of our own minds and souls. That really is the Easter message and the Easter blessing for each one of us today. It is who we are on this Easter morning and on all the mornings of our lives that remain before us and that will greet us. We're people with time enough to make a difference. In a beautiful world that remains tragically and horribly tainted by evils of war and disease and human want and environmental waste and degradation, we are people of faith with time enough to make a difference. In our local community, the piece of the world we occupy with its needs, its tensions, we are people with time to make a difference. In the liberal religious community we continually seek to build here, that's been my joy to build with you now for nearly 24 years, a place where lives can be transformed and minds made free, we are people with time to make a difference. and in the lives we are each living. Lives with their unfinished business, with their unhealed places, with their needs and hungers that are best and maybe only known to each of you. We are, each and all, people still with time to make a difference. Good Friday is a reminder that our lives are not ours forever. And in that sense, it is good, paradoxical as that may seem. Easter is the promise that life is still a joyous choice we can make, a hope-filled yes we can say for as long as we have breath. It is on that note that I wish a very happy and blessed Easter to you all. I invite you to join in our closing hymn. Number 270, O Day of Light and Gladness.